From the time he's young, Joseph is promising. But being promising is not, of course, the same as being successful. In fact, being promising is dangerous. The English literary critic Cyril Connolly said, "Whom the gods would destroy, they first call promising." Because you know that early star often doesn't fulfill his or her potential. And all of us can look back at people who in school seemed to promise so much, and now we realize that school was actually the high point of their lives. And so it's worth trying to understand why Joseph survives and succeeds. Because he starts off very badly. He's gifted, clearly, otherwise he wouldn't be promising. And he's loved, clearly, his father loves him more than he loves the other kids. But remember what Joseph does. It isn't just that he has dreams. And it isn't just that his dreams entail his father and brothers and even his dead mother all bowing down to him. Because after all, let's face it, a lot of adolescents believe they are the center of the world. It's part of a phase of development. And we all go through it, even though we smile about it later when the world teaches us we are actually not the center of the world. But most teenagers of Joseph's age, who imagine that everybody they know bows down to them, are smart enough not to go to their siblings and their parents and say, "Guess what? I had this dream, and all of you were bowing down to me." Now, the fact that Joseph does that already tells you something about him. It actually tells you two things. The first is that he's egotistical. And the second is that he doesn't pay attention to other people. How do you know this? Because Joseph tells his brothers and his father the dream. You can imagine how they reacted, right? They didn't say, "Oh, Joseph, that's wonderful." And then he has a second dream and tells them the second dream about their bowing down to him. Now, if he had the least ability to pay attention to the reaction of people around him, maybe he would have told them the first dream. That just proves he's egotistical. But he never would have come back and told them again, which just shows that he didn't pay any attention to the fact that they hated the first dream. And as a result, both for his ego and for his insensitivity, the brothers hate him. And it's no surprise. Later on, we're also told that Joseph is good looking. This doesn't help. And the rabbis say, why does it tell us that he's good looking? It's to let you know that Joseph couldn't pass by a pool of water or a glass without looking at himself and preening and admiring God's handiwork. So you've got a handsome, egotistical, insensitive teenager, shocking that his brothers don't like him. And remember that on top of all this, the father favors him because he's the firstborn of the woman that he loved and lost, of Rachel. So the story of Joseph's brothers hating Joseph is no surprise. I mean, granted, they go to extremes. They plot to kill him. They sell him into slavery. But the fact that Joseph has these gifts and has this fall, it's no surprise. He's vain, he's insensitive, he's gifted, he's loved. What could be worse? The question is, how, with all of these combinations, with all this strange combination of blessedness and deficiency, did Joseph manage to survive and to thrive? And I think that the story is that the Torah tells us very subtly, it doesn't say it, that the fact that Joseph is sold into slavery and ends up in prison teaches him something that he never could have learned if he hadn't gone through that experience. I mean, after all, you have to assume that the story is there for a reason. That we're supposed to see some kind of transformation in this man. And usually people say that the transformation is when he sees his brothers. But actually, in reading the story this week, it struck me that the transformation happens sooner. And the Torah signals it, but only if you're paying attention. This is what happens. Joseph, as you know, refuses Potiphar's wife and gets thrown in prison as a result. And while he's in prison, he interprets the dreams of the cupbearer and the baker. But why does he interpret their dreams? How is it that the cupbearer and the baker decide that this Hebrew slave is the person, because or a Hebrew prisoner, is the person to tell them what their dreams are? So first of all, I want to give Egypt a little credit here. Because remember, what they didn't do was put him to death, which after all in the ancient world was not an uncommon thing to do with foreign prisoners who've insulted, at least that's what Potiphar's wife claims, insulted the virtue of fancy Egyptian women. So let's at least give Egypt some credit. Not only did they put him in jail, they put him in jail with some pretty fancy prisoners, which could either be because Potiphar's husband knew that the story that his wife was telling wasn't entirely credible. But even so, you've got to give him some credit for protecting Joseph. So sometimes when we get upset at countries, we also have to make sure to give them credit for what they do well. These days, Jews are much happier with France. Got to give countries credit when they do things that they ought to do. So let's give Egypt a little credit here. The first thing that saves Joseph is that he got thrown in prison as opposed to being executed. But here's how the prisoners come to Joseph to interpret their dreams. He says to them, "You look upset. What's wrong?" Now that's not the Joseph we know. The Joseph we know doesn't notice that other people are upset. The Joseph we know is only aware of what he's thinking, of what he's doing, not of what other people are doing, but for the first time, Joseph looks at other people and says, "Oh my, they're upset. I better ask them what's wrong." And because he asks them what's wrong, they say to him, "We've had these dreams and we don't know how to interpret them." And Joseph says, "God interprets dreams. Tell me what you dreamt." So the first thing that Joseph learns from his experience is empathy, because now he has suffered. I mean, you have to imagine Joseph in that pit, not knowing what his brothers were going to do to him, had to think, "Why do they hate me so much?" Maybe because I never paid attention to them. Because I actually never cared about them. Then he gets sold into slavery in Egypt and serves in a fancy person's house, and he's got all these years to think about what happened, and maybe he realizes that he really didn't care about the people around him because he was the favored one, the blessed one, the gifted one, the beautiful one, the loved one. So why does he have to worry about anybody else? But suddenly, he rejoins the human community. He's a prisoner. And prisoners are all alike. And so he pays attention. And when he's told the dream, Then there is the other thing that saves him, and it's the reason that the rabbis called Joseph Yosef HaTzadik. They don't call Abraham that, or Isaac, or Jacob, but Joseph is Yosef HaTzadik because almost every time he opens his mouth, he mentions God. I don't interpret dreams, God does. When it comes to Pharaoh, he says the same thing. Pharaoh says, I heard you can interpret dreams, and he says, not me, it's God. Because Joseph, by learning humility, has learned faith. By understanding that it's not all about him, he realized that there is something greater than him. And that's why when the brothers come to him, he is able not only to test them, but to forgive them, because for the first time he's paying attention to how they react, not only to how he feels. You can imagine if it was all about how he feels, he's still got to feel angry. But he knows how they feel, which is why when he tells them, I am Joseph, your brother, he also says, don't blame yourselves. God intended this to happen. That's an extraordinary thing to say at the very moment that he reveals himself to them. Most of us, I think, would say, I'm Joseph, your brother, and sit back and just enjoy the guilt, the fear, for all those years that you were in jail, that you were sold into slavery, here's your revenge. But right away, he says, I'm Joseph, the brother, the one that you sold into slavery, but it turned out well. It's what God meant. Don't blame yourselves. Now that I see that you've changed, which is what the whole test with the cup has shown him, now that I see that you're not the people that sold me into slavery, don't worry about it. We've all grown through this. We've all had pain. How's our father? That's what he wants to know. The same father that for years he neglected. The same father that he didn't contact when he became the head of Egypt, or vice president, so to speak. So Joseph does change through empathy, through faith, through a recognition that the trials of life are supposed to shrink your ego and open a space inside you for the feelings of others and the reality of God. He couldn't feel it when he was young, when he was full of potential. But it was in there, that ability to see others, how they react, what they think, what their dreams are. It just took some time for Joseph, as for most of us, to get there. The wonderful thing about the Joseph story, of course, is that this vast drama all unfolds according to the plan of getting the Jews down to Egypt in the first place. But along the way, it shows that all the historical experiences that we go through are also supposed to teach us personal lessons, not only national lessons. And this one is clear. That you grow in part by understanding the reality of other people's emotional life, by paying attention, by listening, by reacting, by this simple question that Joseph asked, what's wrong? Why are you upset? Because he saw that their faces had fallen. So this, you may or may not know, to combine all the various themes of the sermon, this is what a French Jewish philosopher, Levinas, said was the heart of Jewish ethics. Levinas was sometimes a very obscure philosopher. He's not so easy to read. But the essence of ethics, he said, in the Jewish tradition, is the face of the other. If you want to know what Judaism is about, it's the face of the other. That's, he said, why Judaism puts such emphasis on the stranger, because the stranger represents the other. It's compassion for those who are unlike you, who are not you, and it's seeing their face. That's, he says, where Judaism begins. Joseph is a beautiful illustration of this. It's the same thing we learn with Moses. Remember, the first thing that Moshe sees when he leaves the palace of the Pharaoh is the suffering. He doesn't see the pyramids. He doesn't see the beauty of Egyptian civilization. He sees the suffering of people, and maybe that's why, at the very end of the Torah, Moshe sees God panim el panim, face to face. It is in the face of the other that you see the image of God. Joseph learns that over the course of a long and difficult life. For us, we have the benefit of the teaching of Yosef HaTzadik. So maybe we don't have to suffer as he did to learn as he did. In the face of the other is the secret of our tradition and the image of God. Shabbat Shalom.